He came to America when he was 6 months old. He started as a stock boy at the grocery store. Eventually, he owned it. He turned it into the biggest grocery store chain in New York City. He now owns a real estate company worth over $2 billion. He ran for mayor of New York City. He almost won. You can't make this story up. This is the Katz Roundtable with John Catsimatidis.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Catsimatidis here. Well, it's the 4th of July, and it's going to be one great day in America. We love America, and we have with us a lot of people that love America. We got Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State. We have Stavridis, Admiral Stavridis, to talk about America, and he was the head of NATO for 4 years. Gordon Chang, how do we protect America? Larry Kudlow, the economy, stupid. And without any further ado, let's go to Governor Scott Walker from Middle America to find out how Independence Day is doing in Middle America. Good morning, Scott Walker. How are you?
Hey, happy Independence Day. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell us, Middle America, how are you guys feeling on the 4th of July out there?
Well, we're proud to have our flags raised and going to parades and shooting off fireworks. I think people realize that whether we were born here or came here from somewhere else, we do have privilege. But it's not white privilege. It's red, white, and blue privilege, the privilege of living in the greatest country in the history of the world, where we've got freedoms and opportunities unlike anywhere else in this great planet. And so even though, you know, there's grumbling in Washington, I think across the heartland of America, people are happy to be in America, and we're blessed to be in this great country, and we want to preserve our republic.
I understand one of the concerns you have about America right now is our schools and how our young people are dealing with them. And you've started a new foundation, I understand. You want to tell all Americans about it?
Yeah, I'm the new president at Young America's Foundation, YAF.org. And you're exactly right. When you look at not only our colleges, which has been a problem for years, but now increasingly in our schools from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade and beyond, not only in government-run schools, but even in private, in some cases, even faith-based schools. Sadly, too many of our educators, too many of our bureaucrats are teaching our kids to hate America, that somehow there's something awful about this country. Certainly, we've had our ups and downs throughout our history since that first day of declaring our independence back on July 4, 1777. But the fact of the matter is we're a country based on freedom and opportunity for everyone, we've got to preserve that and we've got to protect that. And so Young America's Foundation is working on college campuses and high schools, now even in the middle school, with a new program we have called The Long Game, to reach out to students on more campuses, on every campus in America, and to reach out to them sooner, because the left is already out there and we got to push back and counter them.
I understand. Now, why are the teachers doing that? Is it the union's influence? Is it outside influences that are taking upon the schools? I know Chinese are making big investments in the universities. Have you figured it out yet?
Yeah, it's all the above. It's a number of things. You've got the Marxists decades ago couldn't take over America because we're not a class-based society. So they've made their march through our colleges and universities. We've seen that going from just liberal bias, which I remember even as a student myself, to now outright cancel culture, where they're not even letting anyone with a middle to center right view of the world even speak out on these issues. It's why the first and foremost battle is on free speech for conservative students, conservative speakers, even conservative professors. And then the other part is pushing back on curriculum. What we found is there's an effort to try and intimidate conservative students and voices on campus. And that even includes educators, not only just conservative ones, but even ones that just want to be fair. It's the teachers union, it's the professors, but I think it all comes from a much larger plan of this Marxist approach that goes all the way back to Saul Alinsky and the rules for radicals in the 1960s. They've been following that like a playbook, and that's why when I say what we're doing at Young America's Foundation won't change everything overnight, It's going to take more than just a media cycle, maybe even more than a presidential cycle. But we have to. We've got to do more than just win the battle of the day. We've got to win the war for the heart and soul of our republic, and I know we can.
And this foundation is based out of where? Out of Washington? Out of Milwaukee? Where are you based?
No, the headquarters are in just outside of Washington in Reston, Virginia. One of the cool things is we also now own and operate the Reagan Ranch out in Santa Barbara. President Reagan and Mrs. Reagan had their home there even before he was president, all throughout his 8 years and then thereafter. And so I was just out there last week. We bring young people up to the ranch. We bring in conservative speakers and educators. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for these students. But it's not just the ranch. We do conferences. We're having our big national conservative student conference in Houston in about a month, the beginning of August. We have events in Washington. We have events all across the country. And so we'll be on college campuses this fall in full force. Ben Shapiro is one of our leading speakers, but we have all kinds of speakers on campus. We're on YouTube. We're in the classroom. We're in regional conferences. We just know that we can't concede any ground to the left. And one of the best blessings has been in this last year is we've put our content up on YouTube, and we've seen over 500,000 subscribers with new people coming on board. Our goal is to get up to 5 million subscribers and 1 billion views, because we know the left every single day is trying to brainwash our young people. We've got to push back.
So what's the next step? How do people know, get to know more about your foundation and how to help? You have a website?
Yep, it's YAF.org, YAF.org. And if people in particular are excited, we just kicked off a new aggressive action plan we call the Long Game. It's 12 specific action items we're going to be taking over the next few years to counter the left, to get to every campus, to fight for free speech, to reach younger and younger ages, to help educators. If people want to know more about that, then go yaf.org/longgame, and we'll send you a free copy of that little booklet that talks about exactly what our plan is to counter decades of liberal indoctrination on our college campuses and increasingly in our schools. We can, we have to, and we will take on and counter the left.
Well, Scott Walker, thank you so much for everything you do for America, and continue to do for America. And God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you on this 4th of July.
Absolutely. Happy Independence Day. Thanks for all you do as well, too, John. Appreciate it.
With us today is Gordon G. Chang. His Twitter handle is at Gordon G. Chang. And anything to go with the Far East, he knows about it. Good morning, Gordon. How are you today?
Good morning, John, and happy July 4th.
Thank you. Thank you. What do you feel about July 4th? When you wake up Sunday morning and say today's 4th of July, what are your thoughts?
First thing is that we are have a generation of Americans who don't love our country, who don't understand our place in history, who don't respect the flag. And that troubles me because, as Ronald Reagan famously said, we don't pass freedom through the bloodstream. We could lose it in a generation. And clearly that is something that is at the top of, should be the top of concern of every American. And at the same time, we have malicious attacks against our country from China. I worry about how many more July 4ths we will have.
Well, I have a similar concern, and I said to somebody at dinner the other night, the 300th year is 2076, and I have concerns about our country, the way it's going right now, about 2076. And Hong Kong, have we lost it?
We haven't lost Hong Kong, but of course we're losing it. The thing about Hong Kong is that there's an insurgency there, John. And we know from the history of insurgencies, both in Hong Kong and elsewhere, that they can go quiet for years, and then they pop up again. And that's what happened in 2019. With the large-scale protest, one of them almost 2 million people in a city of 7.4 million. So you can imagine the breadth of feeling, the depth of feeling. Also, we saw this a couple weeks ago when Apple Daily closed. People lined up for the newspaper. They sold 1 million copies, about 10 times more than their normal run. And that's a real indication that people in Hong Kong want to support freedom and democracy. So China can keep them quiet for a long time, but I don't think that they're going to extinguish the feeling for Hong Kong identity. And basically, Beijing has been fueling the insurgency against it.
Long term, China for thousands of years has built walls to keep themselves in, and they didn't want to have anything to do with the outside world. Has the mentality now changed?
No, it hasn't. And that's an important question you asked, John, because it's a question that Americans don't ask. We are seeing under Xi Jinping, the current ruler, building these walls again against the outside world. During the two millennia of imperial rule, Chinese emperors closed their country off. And that is just indicative of this indication that the world is too dangerous for China. Although Chinese rulers believe that they ruled the world, they didn't want the outside influences in their country. Xi Jinping is doing the same thing. He's obviously doing it with the Great Firewall, which is the world's most sophisticated set of internet controls. He's doing it by making life very difficult for foreign business, trying to reserve opportunities for state enterprises. And he's doing it with censorship that we have not seen for a very long time. So China's moving in the wrong direction. When Xi Jinping talks about Chinese culture, what he's really meaning is he doesn't want outside culture. And we've seen it in all sorts of campaigns against Winnie the Pooh and all sorts of Western cartoon characters where it's sort of funny, but this is actually serious business.
Now, the other day, on the 100th year anniversary of the communism in China, Xi Jinping sort of sounded like he was threatening the United States. How did you take those words?
Yes, they were important threats. There were the threats that people have talked about when Xi Jinping said about cracking heads and spilling blood. And really, that was basically promising to commit aggression against neighbors because he believes that territory under the control of his neighbors is really China's, and he's willing to use force, as he's now using force against India. But there was another line in that speech which hasn't gotten attention, which is even more ominous. And that, he said, that the Chinese people and the Communist Party are good at taking down the old world and building a new one. And the reason why that is so dangerous is because Xi Jinping has been talking for decades about Tianxia, or all under heaven. In other words, the notion that China is the world's only legitimate ruler, that it rules all under heaven. And he's been talking about taking down the Westphalian International Order and replacing it with a Tianxia system. His officials have been much more explicit about this. So we've been put on notice that Xi Jinping believes that the United States is not sovereign and that we are basically just subject people to the greater grandeur of the Chinese court.
There's so much influence on our country these days, whatever words you want to use it. You know, the border, the fentanyl coming in from China on the border, the pushing of electric cars because China makes the majority of the batteries. Is there undue influence from the Far East on our country? Is that where all these new words are coming from?
Well, absolutely, because last year China actually incited violence on American streets. They did that a number of different ways, sometimes under cover of darkness, sometimes in broad daylight. And there are indications, unconfirmed, but there are strong indications that China actually organized violent demonstrators on our streets, specifically the night of May 31st, one block north of the White House. That was the night that St. John's Church was burned. And there have been unconfirmed reports also of Chinese demonstrators organized by the Chinese government on Southern California streets. We have a political class right now that is definitely not interested in looking at this. But we're being attacked by a foreign enemy that seeks the overthrow of the American government and is using violence to do it.
What else do you want to tell the American people on the 4th of July? Are we worried about making it to 2076, the 300th year of our country?
I'm worried about making it out of this decade, John, because China's attacks are so malicious. China exploits every point of contact with the United States, and now we're being overwhelmed. Our FBI is overwhelmed. Our local law enforcement is overwhelmed. Governments at all level are overwhelmed. And if we don't sever these links, we may not be able to save our republic. We need to cut links with China until we can be sure that we can manage things against these unrelenting and malicious assaults.
Unfortunately, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of influence coming from the Far East, and I think there's a lot of influence on the other side of the world with Iran and Russia. And all I can say is thank you for everything you do for America, and you worked very hard at it, getting the word out. And God bless you, and God bless America.
Yeah, God bless America, and thank you so much, John, for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. You're doing God's work.
Thank you so much. And at Gordon G. Chang for Gordon's Twitter, and we'll be tweeting the interview out too. Good morning, America. This is the Cats Roundtable with John Katzmann. It's Sunday morning. Well, it's 4th of July. And what does it mean to a lot of our Americans around the world? Well, we have with us one great American this morning. We have Mike Pompeo, a graduate of West Point, CIA director, former, and former Secretary of State. He knows our country, loves our country. Good morning, Mike Pompeo. How are you this morning?
John, I am great. It is great to be with you on the 4th of July. Great to everybody who's listening to this today. Happy 4th of July to everyone, this special Independence Day where we celebrate this amazing country.
You wake up this morning on a Sunday morning. It's the 4th of July. You're a West Point graduate. You love America. Give us your feelings of how you're feeling on the 4th of July.
You know, I had this incredible privilege these last 4 years, and I've had now a few months to reflect on. I had this privilege to travel around the world, representing the United States, trying to keep every American safe, trying to keep our Constitution intact and defend those values that we have here in America. Because I think back on those 4 years, I recall so many times where people from all over across the world, our friends, frankly, our adversaries too, they all envied the United States. They knew we were such a special country, so exceptional in so many ways, and they wanted to emulate us or frankly sometimes take us down a notch. And they all appreciated that this was a place where we respected every human being, that we treated people fairly and equally, that our government mostly tried to stay out of our way so we could live our lives. And that harkens back to when I was a young cadet now, goodness gracious, multiple decades ago, when I first started my time there, where I came to understand, I had read the Federalist Papers and read history of the United States. What a great place, this asset we've been given because we are just privileged to be Americans. And I think about today on this 4th of July, how special that is and how we should just never take it for granted.
It's the 245th year since 1776. What are your concerns for the future? There's so many things happening. I feel sometimes like America is under attack. Give us your fears and what Americans should do in the future.
Well, this is a pretty resilient nation. When we turn on the TV and watch news, you can see lots of negative things, and I get all of that. I'm worried about some of the things that are being taught in our schools. If we teach that somehow the founding of the United States of America was somehow flawed, it was corrupt, it was racist, that's really dangerous. It strikes at the very moorings, the very foundations of our country. And so I certainly worry about that. It's called critical race theory sometimes, or 1619 project. But at the end, they're attacking the central understandings that we have shared together for 245 years and attempt to divide the country. If that continues, if that is allowed to flourish and prosper, then we could, in fact, lose this thing that is so special. We can't let that happen. I've been out around the country these last days talking to people. I don't think anybody's about to let that happen. And so I'm an optimist, but I do worry that if we become fractured or we lose faith in our constitutional principles, that somewhere, somehow, or some adversary like the Chinese Communist Party will come undermine what's made our country so special.
Now, you were CIA director, besides being Secretary of State. Do you believe there's outside forces at work to undermine our democracy?
John, that's a really important question. It's very clear that there are multiple nations that are doing lots of different things to try and undermine our democracy, whether it's the Russians and the meddling that they did in our election, or whether it's the Chinese Communist Party's massive propaganda campaign here at home. You'll recall, John, that it was so bad at one place, the consulate, the Chinese consulate in Houston, Texas. The spying was so bad that we had to order that all of those diplomats, really spies, go home and close their consulate. So there are those. They want to look. They don't like the fact that their people want to come live here and that their students want to come study here. And they don't like the fact that we are able to put our democratic principles first and always. And so they are. They're actively engaged here in the United States, trying to undermine our very way of life. With good leadership, that won't happen. And that's what we're going to have to make sure that we have.
China. It looks like Hong Kong is just about gone. Should we worry about Taiwan more?
Sadly, I agree. We made lots of efforts to help the people of Hong Kong. It sadly didn't prove to be enough. And Hong Kong now is just frankly another communist city, much like the mainland. They had all that freedom, all that prosperity, all the good things that were going on in Hong Kong look to be just about over. The Chinese Communist Party is intent on doing the same kind of thing to Taiwan, to deny them their capacity to be a democratic country that has the capacity to actually deliver really good outcomes for their people. I think Xi Jinping, the leader of the CCP, has made clear his intention. He calls it reunification. Of course, it's no such thing. It was never part of China. But he wants to bring them inside the communist, Marxist, Leninist views that he has for China and for his party. We can do a lot to deter that. We must.
On our previous conversation a few weeks ago, you were very much concerned about our universities. And they're not giving equal time to all sides like universities are supposed to do. What should American people do that? Should they pick up the phone or write letters? Or what would they do? What would you suggest?
I am worried about our institutions of higher education. They have been moved to the left. They have lost what I was just talking about, this understanding of America and its traditions in important ways. We can all do so much. You mentioned, right, calling, reaching out, writing letters. That's certainly important. But we can also make choices about where our kids go to school and make sure that our kids are receiving an education that is broad. I'm happy if the students take courses in philosophy and they learn about the history of socialism and the history of communism. I think when they learn that, they'll see that those have failed every time they've been tried all around the world. What can't happen is those ideas can't be foisted on them as the direction that our country should go. They should be taught a broad array of history and then can form good judgments on their own and have critical thinking on their own. There's so many things that we each can do. We have to be focused. And I wouldn't just say higher ed, John. Our high schools, our middle schools, our elementary schools, the risk is there as well. Parents have to take firm control of their children's education and make sure that they're being taught the things that have made this country so special.
Mike Pompeo, I fully agree. Mike Pompeo, former West Pointer, CIA director, former Secretary of State, one great American. Thank you for everything you've done for America.
Bless you. Happy 4th of July, John.
Happy 4th of July. Thank you. And we're all proud to be Americans. Well, I have one good friend that's very proud to be an American, and he was a retired four-star officer in the United States Navy. He led the NATO alliance global operations for 4 years as Supreme Allied Commander. His name is Admiral James Stavridis. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
I'm doing great, Katz. Great to be on with you, sir.
Now, it's the 4th of July. You know, you served our country, our military for so many years. What do you think of? What memories do you have when you wake up and say, today's the 4th of July?
First of all, as a sailor, a Navy officer, a ship captain, every 4th of July, I would walk back to the fantail of the ship, the back end of the ship, and there flies the U.S. flag. And it is just makes your heart beat a little faster when you look up there and you're on a U.S. warship. You're on a sovereign piece of U.S. soil, sailing the oceans of the world, defending your nation. So 4th of July, in those days when I was at sea, walk back, look at that flag, pretty remarkable moment. In today's world, I look at our nation with many challenges, obviously. But, boy, any other nation would take our hand of cards at the end of the day. We've got a massive country, natural resources, an expanding population. We're still a young nation. Immigration helps us. Yeah, we've got to control the southern border for sure. But people want to come here from all around the world. We've got university systems that are the envy of the world, high-tech companies. We've got a lot going for us. And I remain very confident about our country today, John.
Tell us, you recently wrote a book where you were concerned. It was a novel, but you are deeply concerned, I believe, about conflict between Asia and our country. Talk to us about it and tell us about the book.
The book is called 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. And so it's set in the year 2034, John, and it hypothesizes an incident occurs in the South China Sea between the U.S. and China. These are disputed waters. China claims them as territorial seas. U.S. believes they're international waters. Possibility of a miscalculation there is always present. And as the book opens, such an incident occurs. China has allies in Russia, in Iran. The United States responds, and the escalation continues. I don't want to give the book away, but it is a very dire set of circumstances. The book is not an apocalypse. It's not the end of the world, but it talks about and shows through characters what could happen if we stumbled into a war with China. So the key is military deterrence, having a military that can go toe-to-toe with China. That's what prevents them from miscalculating, shall we say. It's having a strong economy where we ensure that we have fair and free access into Chinese markets if we're going to give them fair and free access into our markets. And finally, a diplomatic strategy that ensures we have allies, partners, friends around the world, from NATO in Europe to Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, and others in Asia. We need a strategy to face China in this 21st century. So I wrote the book to encourage us to think in those terms and realize that China is a very real challenge for the United States today.
It's a gigantic challenge, and it looks like, Admiral, it looks like we've lost Hong Kong completely, or the free world has lost Hong Kong. Is Taiwan the next thing on China's target?
I think without question, China has been very clear. They intend to bring back what they consider a rogue province back into the fold, make it a part of China. Question is, are they willing to roll the dice and try and do that militarily? I don't think they are yet, principally because they don't really know what our response would be, because they know our military is still very strong and very capable. I think you're going to see the Biden administration draw closer to Taipei and to work more closely with the Taiwanese military to try and create a sense on the part of the China that if you tried to take Taiwan militarily, you would face a very challenging military scenario. This is sometimes, John, called the porcupine theory, which is to say if Taiwan becomes spiny and difficult to digest, it's less likely that China would want to take a pass at them.
We have a few minutes left. What else would you like to tell the American people?
I'll give you two things that I'm watching closely, John. One is events in the Middle East. Here we see Iran go through an election just 2 weeks ago and elect a extreme hardliner as president. His name is Ibrahim Raisi. He's a former prosecutor who signed the death warrants of thousands of Iranian protesters, very hardcore figure who is often someone people point to as the next supreme leader behind the Supreme Ayatollah Khamenei. So he is going to have his inauguration in August, and I think we've got some real tensions coming immediately after that. And you see it, of course, in the recent strikes that the Biden administration conducted against Iranian-backed militias in Iraq. There is going to be more and more tension in the Middle East, and so what should we do about it? we should be working as closely as we can with Israel, with our Gulf Arab partners. We should encourage those two to draw closer together, and we should continue to maintain sanctions on Iran unless and until Iran makes a good faith change in its behavior around the region, its pursuit of nuclear weapons, and its desire for long-range ballistic missiles technology. All of those, I think, are unlikely under President Raisi, and therefore, I think that's an area of the world that we ought to be very concerned about.
Well, Admiral Stavridis, thank you for everything you've done for America and continue to do for America, and God bless you and God bless America.
Indeed, and every 4th of July, we ought to be saying those words. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you. This is the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back.
America! America!
Good morning, America. This is the Cats Roundtable. John Cassidy. It's here Sunday morning, 4th of July. And with us this morning is Dr. Peter Mihalos to update us. What's going on with the virus? Is there any effect in that new Delta variant? Good morning, Dr. Mihalos. How are you?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Cats Roundtable audience. And the update is, I want to start off with the good news, is that 99% of the people in the United States who have died from COVID, unfortunately, were not vaccinated. So the good news is that if you are vaccinated, there's a 99% chance that you will not die. Yes, you know, there is this new variant, and it is more aggressive. It started in India in October 2020, and they're calling it the Delta variant because they don't want to call variants by the country they originated in, like the Brazilian variant, or they call it the Gamma variant now. But what you know, we're not trying to be alarmist, but the virus has mutated to this variant, and there's one called the Delta, and there's even a Delta Plus variant, and it appears to be 60% more contagious than the original variant that we saw that came out of the Wuhan area that we were hearing about. And the bottom line is that of 853,000 people who were hospitalized in the United States in the last few months, only 1,200 of them were not vaccinated. So it seems that the vaccine is very important. And with this Delta variant that's more contagious, you can still get sick when you are vaccinated, but you don't end up hospitalized or end up dead. And that's the very important reason why we need to get vaccinated. And we're seeing, for example, in England, where 62% of their population is vaccinated, that they have a big rise in these Delta variant case, which is now the predominant case in the United Kingdom because of travel that occurred between India and the UK. But the good news is that the hospitalization and death rate is not as high, which is all very good. And the Associated Press spoke to the CDC, and they said in the United States in May of the 18,000 COVID deaths that occurred, only 150 of them were in vaccinated people. So this is very important news to tell all the people who are our listeners out there. Please, if you have relatives and all the anti-vaxxers out there, that your chances of dying from a COVID vaccine or any vaccine are one in a million. Your chances of dying of COVID are one in 500. So I urge people to get a vaccine so that you can build up antibodies and fight this new variant, which I'm very concerned about the unvaccinated people in the United States as it spreads. Because look at India. India is a great country, great democracy, and they have, you know, great doctors in India. But the people in India who are being exposed, who are unvaccinated because they've only vaccinated 4% of the population, people are dying left and right. And we see the scenes, the horrific scenes in the street and the mass cremations that are going on. So we urge all our listeners to please get vaccinated. The good news also on the horizon is that there are oral antiviral agents, the same way we got out of the HIV crisis. You know, 40 years later, we still don't have a good vaccine for HIV, but we were able to do an oral antiviral cocktail, and that antiviral now that Merck is working on. It's called molnupiravir, and it is supposed to be approved in the United States in September. And the great news is that they've licensed it to five companies in India, and they're giving it out now. They're going to start giving it out like candy, so we should see the death rate in India dropping out because it blocks all coronaviruses, and it looks like it'll also work against the variants. So that's very important. So basically think of it as the largest human clinical trial of an oral antiviral in history. And for the anti-vaxxers, I also want to tell you, guess what? The largest clinical trial of a vaccine happening at warp speed, thanks to Operation Warp Speed, is hundreds of millions of people have taken these vaccines, and most of them are doing great, and they're not dying, and they're not being hospitalized. So please, as you know, our public service message is, you know, get vaccinated, and the vaccines are working. There's going to be issues with any vaccine, of course. Just like there's issues with whether you have a flu, mumps, influenza vaccine, they all have some issues. But for the most part, you know, they are safe and they are saving lives.
Doctor, there's groups of people that are not getting vaccinated. I know young people, young women in their 25 to 35 age have complained that the vaccination has affected their periods, their menstrual periods, et cetera, et cetera. What have you heard about that?
Well, I think that anything that will generate an antibody response and inflammation may affect any of our, you know, life functions. But these effects, from what I've heard and read, are all transient phenomenon. And the bottom line is you really don't want to get sick. And for the young people, I tell them, especially if you have anti-vaxxer seniors at home, and I know several families, you know, who just don't have the knowledge and education and understanding. And if those young people bring it home, it will be a problem. You know, a friend of mine was an attorney in Great Neck. Basically, the two kids came home from college. Both parents were anti-vaxxers. The mother died, and the father is in the ICU. So this is what I worry about. The silent spreading of the disease. So I think you have to really look at the numbers and the statistics. But, you know, when someone mentions one case, oh, this person got a reaction, just like they tried to create fear-mongering with the J&J with the clots. And then when they looked at it more closely, three out of the five women were on birth control pills. One in 1,000 women who take birth control will get clots no matter what. One in 500,000 will die from it, those clots anyway, separate from any vaccine. So you have to really look. And the other women were smokers, so you have to, which also increases your risk in getting clots. So you have to really start looking closely at the data and the number and the size and the details and comorbidities.
And also, there's a group of healthcare workers. There's a very large group of healthcare workers. For some reason, they didn't want to get the vaccine. And aren't they the most vulnerable because they hang around hospitals, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. But just because somebody's a healthcare worker doesn't mean that they're educated or knowledgeable about how serious things are. A healthcare worker doesn't mean you're a doctor or a PhD or a nurse who's really, really studied. And one of the problems is the more we know, sometimes it's a good thing or a bad thing. But in this case, it's a good thing. And a lot of, the healthcare workers are not necessarily, have any education or training in infectious diseases, and they don't really get it. And they think, I'm tough. I've survived all these years in a hospital. And then suddenly it just turns on you. The nasty thing about this is you're feeling fine. You get sick. I have a cold. And then 3 days later, suddenly you can't breathe. And then you don't go get treatment. Now in New York, you get treated, you get a Regeneron antibody, and you can feel better in 24 hours. We have all these miracle things that
came out. So bottom line, get your vaccine and keep your immune system up. Have plenty of vitamin D3, plenty of vitamin C, plenty of zinc. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter, Dr. Peter at WABCRadio.com. Thank you for keeping our listeners safer, and have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thank you, and thank you for always getting the truth out.
Good morning, America. This is the Cats Roundtable. John Katzman. Here's Sunday morning, 4th of July. Mm-hmm.
We're here in the studio with Lydia Serrani, Governor David Patterson. And on the line with us, we have Larry Kudlow, the country's number one economist. Well, tell us, I'm sure you're watching television, the markets. How are we doing?
Markets are strong. The jobs report today was pretty good. Pretty good. Shows that people are going back to work. It would be great if Biden weren't paying people not to work. Then the unemployment rate would be even lower. But we are making progress. The economy is going to grow, I guess, in the second quarter by about 8 or 9%. I still think for the year it's going to be about 8% growth. And the stock market is doing just fine. Interest rates are low. Here's what we have to do. We have to beat Biden's entitlement and tax program. That's the key point. The founding fathers, speaking of July 4th, would not approve. They believed in Adam Smith's free market. Smith wrote his book, The Wealth of Nations, a few months before the Declaration was written in 1776. And Smith said we should have minimal regulation of taxes, trade, and commerce. Unfortunately, President Biden wants maximum regulation of taxes, trade, and commerce. But I think his entitlement and tax hike package will be defeated. And that would be the best thing, the best tonic. And then we can look forward to another 5 years of prosperity and a bull market in stocks.
And Larry, by September, those payments should run out. And that should help as well, shouldn't it?
Yes, there's going to be a fight, David, because the Democratic conference in both the Senate and the House, they want to make those things permanent, okay? They want to, first of all, extend the unemployment benefit, and second of all of the relief in the package passed last February, they want to make that relief permanent for all the different entitlements that they want, all the different transfer payments they want, you know, child care, home care, this and that. Plus, they want to expand Medicare. They want to expand Medicaid, a whole laundry list of things. They want to make it permanent. And I think the double cross on the infrastructure package is still on, because I think that the president and Pelosi and Schumer want very much to link that to their high tax, high entitlement next tranche, so-called American Family Plan. And I still think that's going to be a big problem. And I think the whole thing is going to hinge on Senator Sinema of Arizona. I think she is going to be the most important player. I know people include Manchin, but I'm not confident about Manchin. I think it's going to come down to Sinema.
But Larry, let me ask you to take your economic hat off for a second. Put your political hat on. How does it help Democrats to continue this? In other words, what's the goal here when, if we go back, you know, the entitlement programs from that came from a year ago, February, were really supposed to be temporary. That's why a lot of people voted for them.
Those were bipartisan plans.
Right. And that's why the feeling of being double crossed is what a lot of the Republican senators and House members are expressing now.
Well, yeah, Republicans are going to, I think, hang tough. I interviewed Republican leader of the House, Kevin McCarthy. He thinks his conference is going to be tough. I interviewed Mitch McConnell. He thinks his conference is going to be tough. I interviewed John Barrasso, who's one of the leadership in the Senate. He thinks the conference will be tough. So actually, I'm not really worried about the GOP. Maybe I should, but I'm not.
No, I didn't think you should be. I'm saying this is where that sentiment is coming from, because the presumption of the legislation was to deal with a temporary issue. Now, if we're telling everybody they can go back to work and we're telling them they can take their masks off, then we should be withdrawing the support, because in the normal course of business, no one would have voted for that if there was no virus.
Well, I think that's probably true, but I think that the Democrats use the virus as an excuse. Look, let's go back and look at the history. You had two massive relief packages last year, in April of 2020, at the height of the pandemic. where the catastrophe was at its worst. And then you had a second one, a little tougher, but still got through in late December. Now, those were bipartisan packages. There was no reconciliation necessary. President Trump helped pilot that through. Now, in January and February of this year, even though the vaccinations were starting to take off and the economy was in a V-shaped recovery, the Democrats insisted on a $2 trillion package, which was probably $1.5 trillion too much. It should have been a targeted package. And there was no bipartisanship, right, since we're talking politics. They had to jam it down with a 51-vote reconciliation, okay? Now, the question is, are they going to have to jam down the next tranche, right? I think they're going to try. We'll see. I don't know how it's going to. I mean, I'm looking at the stock market, to John's question. The Dow's up another 150 points. The S&P is up 32 points. The Dow is at 34,786. That's an amazing number. And the S&P is at a record high. Okay, the NASDAQ was up 116. The S&P has been up seven straight days. You got 850,000 some odd new jobs today. The economy is doing very well. The stock market is doing very well. Everybody who owns 401ks or any other retirement account, which includes middle-class Americans, are doing fabulously well. Consumer wealth is soaring. We don't need this kind of government assistance. And we don't need permanent entitlement increases. We don't need it. The Democrats, however, have a different, you know, their world, let's face it, it's the progressive left. You know, they want government to run the economy. They're already negotiating. I mean, here's an amazing thing. The G7 and G20 is approving a tax increase for American companies that was promoted by the president and his Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. We've lost our tax sovereignty. Now, number one, I don't want to raise taxes on American companies at all. The Trump tax cuts generated the best economy in a couple of generations. And the Trump tax cuts are partially responsible, along with the Trump vaccine, for this economic V-shaped recovery and stock market boom. Why would you turn over tax sovereignty to foreign countries? And incidentally, let's be very clear, this new global minimum tax, which is going to be an excess profits tax, will hit about 20 or 25 companies around the world. Now, you can take out the two or three Chinese companies because they won't pay it. There aren't any Russian companies. There aren't any Russian companies. And 16 of the remaining 20 are all American companies. So we are participating in a world tax hike that will penalize American companies, right? Not EU companies, not G7 companies, not G20 companies, but American companies. You know, I worked for a guy who wanted America first. This crowd wants America last. That's a problem. So anyway, here's my point. We have a stock market bull that could go on for years. We have an economic boom that can go on for years. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Larry, what is your view of the increase in prices right now? And your point earlier, when we did a $2 trillion relief package in this January, when we only lost $2 trillion during the whole pandemic, it just didn't seem as if that was the right number.
But look, I think it's going to be a temporary inflation. I think it's because the economy is rebounding from the deflation crash that we had during the pandemic contraction. A lot of people, a lot of conservatives, and, you know, I don't want to defend Biden on inflation or anything else right now, but I honestly think that you've got supply shortages, you've got demand exceeding supply because people didn't expect this boom to happen quite so quickly. If you go back a year, the blue chip forecasters weren't expecting an economic recovery until 2022. So actually, it began in the middle of 2020 and is continuing to pick up speed here in 2021. So I'm just saying industry wasn't really ready for it. And I think that's the biggest source. You know, you had, for example, the biggest port in America is the port of Los Angeles and Long Beach. And that was just clogged up with tankers and container ships. And there weren't enough employees to unload it. Now, that's starting to ease up quite a bit. But, you know, those kinds of shortages create temporary price hikes. But I don't fret so much about that. I'm glad Americans are going back to work. I mean, I think the jobs number is a good number, 850,000. The so-called underemployment rate, which is not only those who are unemployed, but those who are discouraged, that thing actually came down a little bit from 9.8 from 10.2. That's a good sign. And wages and hours worked continue to rise. So, you know, the labor force is coming back, and half the states have walked away from the overly generous unemployment. The whole thing peters out in early September. But I'm just telling you, you wait and see. Mark my words, Democrats are going to extend that, and they're going to try to make all the spending plans permanent.
Larry Kudlow, have a great 4th of July, and thank you for calling in today. And God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable every Sunday morning. We'll bring you the latest in what's happening in our community, our country, and the world. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a nice Sunday.